Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Attorney Pat Sangle. I represent Jose Quintero in this appeal. The issue in front of the Court is an interpretation of Rule 36 and whether the District Court's reliance on Rule 36 to amend the criminal judgment to include...
Mr. Sangle, I don't understand what the point of this appeal is. Suppose we say the district court lacked authority to modify the judgment when it did because an appeal was pending. We would remand. At that point, the appeal would no longer be pending. Then the district court could amend the judgment to add the forfeiture, and your client would be in the same position he's in now.
That's correct.
There's one potential difference, of course. By the very fact of bringing this appeal in an effort to weasel out of something he agreed to in the plea bargain, your client appears to be in breach of his bargain. So presumably the prosecutor could reinstate the dismissed charges and take back the benefits, which doesn't sound like something you really want.
Well, I'm not so sure, because I think that ultimately it comes down to whether it's true he did not bring a motion to withdraw his plea. And in fact, this entire issue did not arise until after the notice of appeal was filed. So it was.
Well, what's the point of the notice of appeal, by the way, since you don't appear to have raised any issues that could conceivably have led to the notice of appeal?
The purpose of the notice of appeal, Your Honor, is that my client wanted to appeal, and I have an obligation to appeal.
Well, presumably, your client wanted to appeal in order to present some argument, or does your client just like the fact that lawyers will be spinning wheels pointlessly?
Well, I can't address that. All I can tell you is I'm sure the court is aware of my obligation when my client directs me to file a notice of appeal in a criminal case. The fact is that this issue never arose until after that was filed. I can't. It's certainly true that no other issues were raised regarding the sentence. Because, frankly, I didn't see any. But we're here now because of what happened after the filing of the notice of appeal. Whether this constitutes a breach of the plea agreement or not, I'm not so certain. But the issue at this point is...
The client agreed to the forfeiture as part of the plea agreement.
That's true.
So trying to weasel out of something he's agreed to is a breach of the plea agreement.
Well...
You know, when we say that when the defendant breaks his promises, the prosecutor is not bound by his promises.
Well, but you had a similar issue in United States versus Peace, Your Honor, where the defendant agreed to the forfeiture of the vehicle. He pled guilty. There was a preliminary order of forfeiture, as here. The court failed to incorporate the forfeiture at the sentencing hearing. And the 11th Circuit set aside the forfeiture on the grounds that it didn't comply with the rule regarding the incorporation of a criminal forfeiture at sentencing. And that issue, as far as I can ascertain, has not been resolved by this court. It appears to be an unsettled issue.
Just let me...
I'm sorry, Your
Honor. Satisfy my curiosity.
Sure.
Who cares about this car anyway? Just in the academic
sense. I don't.
I can't think of anything. what would be the
value of
the car?
Apparently it means a lot to him. What's that, Your Honor?
Where could he use it right at the moment?
Frankly, I don't know where the car is, Your Honor.
Well, frankly, if you won and got the car back, what would he do with it? Where would it be? And what's it worth, just in the academic sense? Was it
I'm not certain.
1983 what?
Chevrolet Caprice.
Wow.
Apparently it means a lot to him.
Well.
How I can't definitively describe
it
to the court.
At one stage of the game it did mean a lot to him because he said he'd let it go, agree with the forfeiture. Now all of a sudden it's something really great, he really wants it. When he can't use it, it isn't worth a dime anyway. On the other hand, you got to have a trip here, so that's, you know.
I take it the United States is planning to give the car to GM as part of the federal bailout program?
No, but I could certainly recommend that, Your Honor.
You give it to the police to let them use it for road races and things of that nature.
So the court's points are well taken.
I have a question about 32 2B3. It says that at sentencing, or at any time before sentencing, the defendant consents, the order of forfeiture becomes final as to the defendant and must be made a part of the sentence and be included in the judgment. Well, doesn't that mean that the preliminary order ripens into a final judgment and it has to be included in the order and there's no discretion of any sort? So if it's left, it's become final, that's what the rule says, and it's supposed to be put into the sentence. But if it's not put into the sentence, that really is a clerical oversight, since it's become final.
Well, we have
cases in which a judge will say, a civil case, unless something happens, this judgment will become final on, you know, January 1st. And that's treated as, you know, ripening into a final judgment. Well, isn't this the same thing here? By the force of the rule, it would become a final judgment at the end of the case.
Well, it depends, obviously,
so
how
the only oversight is the failure to recite it in the judgment. It's not an oversight in the sense the judge didn't realize that this punishment was due.
Well, and that's how the First, the Third, and the Eighth Circuits interpret that, the language of 32.2b3. But if you look closely at the language, it does contain mandatory language of must, which means it must occur at the sentencing. And the other argument is the government never raised this issue at sentencing. For them, and the appeal was filed prior to the government moving to have the judgment amended to reflect the forfeiture of the vehicle.
But if the rule has made it a final judgment, the fact that it isn't recited as such seems like just a clerical oversight rather than a... It would be one thing if the law said this person's punishment should be X and the judge overlooks that and then later says, oh yeah, I had to punish him X, now I'm issuing a new judgment. That's an oversight. That's a material oversight. But here there is the order. It's not just that the statute requires the judge to do something. The order was entered, and the rule says it became final at sentencing. So,
well, I don't know that it becomes final at sentencing unless
it's
ordered as part of it.
The rule says that. The rule says it becomes final at sentencing.
Right, if it's and must be made a part of the sentence, and be included at the in the judgment at sentencing. So
your rebuttal time is you're into that. Here's your chance to duck.
I think I've probably said enough. I'll reserve any additional time. Thank you.
Is open.
Thank you.
You still want the car?
I don't want to say we don't get the car. What we do with it, I don't know. But
where's the car now?
It is in Marshall's custody, being taken care of, being serviced. The same thing we would do if it were a 2008 Porsche.
It's not being serviced. It sounds like the cost of servicing would exceed its market value.
I think it would probably be the perfect car to make undercover buys in. I'm sure that
it must be something better than that. An old bus.
May it please the court. My name is Elizabeth Altman. I represent the United States in this case. In this case, the defendant agreed to the forfeiture of the vehicle. A preliminary order of forfeiture was signed by the district court. As noted, the forfeiture was not, however, pronounced at sentencing, nor was it included in the judgment. Three other circuits say this can be remedied with a motion under Rule 36. That's what the government did in this case. The court granted it. It's the government's position that amending the judgment using Rule 36 was the proper way to fix this error because it was, in fact, clerical. Should this court disagree with that, the defendant still cannot prevail. As pointed out, he did agree to the forfeiture in the plea agreement, and more than that, he also agreed to waive all constitutional, legal, and equitable defenses to the forfeiture, which would seem to include the appeal of it. In addition, even...
Well, you planning to ask the district court to set aside the plea agreement and take back any concessions made?
I cannot say for sure that we would, but I think it's certainly an option, and the concessions would include perhaps acceptance of responsibility.
There certainly would be fewer breaches of plea agreements if prosecutors did that more often.
I would agree with that. Should the court believe that this wasn't clerical, Rule 35 also could have been used to make the amendment. It was timely. And so if 36 was wrong, it was a harmless error. The courts that have agreed to this, as was noted, the First Circuit, the Fifth Circuit, I'm sorry, First, Third, and Eighth, they've reasoned...
Those are all good circuits.
They're all good circuits, not the Ninth. They've reasoned that defendants have notice from the time of indictment, that there's no unfair surprise, that there's generally no dispute about the item to be forfeited, there's no suggestion that anyone else is entitled to the item, and that the court has expressed its intent through the preliminary order of forfeiture. And for these reasons, there's no substantive rights at issue, and it is clerical. So we believe that was the proper method under which the court should have made the amendment and did so properly. If not, as I noted, we have the agreement in the plea agreement, and then we also have the Rule 35 option. He was sentenced on November 19th. The motion was granted by the district court timely. The district court did later file something else asking that we brief this issue, but the order was still granted within the time frame under Rule 35, and this certainly would be the type of error contemplated under Rule 35, if not Rule 36. We think Rule 36 is the way to go. So unless the court has any other questions, I would rest on my brief and respectfully request the court affirm the amended judgment.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Stengel?
Point out to the court that the same factual predicates that you have in this case, namely the agreement to forfeit, the entry of the preliminary order of forfeiture, and then the notice of appeal, are factually exactly what happened in United States versus Peace. And in that case, the 11th Circuit said that merely because a preliminary order of forfeiture is entered does not relieve the district court from including an order of forfeiture in its judgment. Therefore, I believe this court should look to the 11th Circuit in peace in making its decision. But thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stengel, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.